Well.
If
Hello, Ben.
it isn't the
How are you?
consequences of my own actions.
Exactly.
Yeah. I
Exactly.
mean, serious.
I so there's a time in every Iowa football season where it stops being about how Iowa wins and it starts being just frickin' win. And I think when it comes to the rivals, that's ultimately the point, right? I mean, especially with Minnesota, it is fun to see them lose in as riotous of fashion as possible. And to get there, Iowa has to play on that razor's edge.
Harrison, you're talking to a guy who still has his rejection letter from the University of Minnesota, someone who grew up as a Minnesota fan his whole life, someone whose dad is a Minnesota fan, someone whose grandfather has n his name on buildings on the University of Minnesota campus. And this couldn't feel any better because fuck 'em all. Because this feeling right now is better than any therapy session I've ever been to. Because, I mean, who hates Iowa? Not this guy, right? I mean, I walk into my house today or my parents' house and I'd say, what is your favorite win over Iowa of the PJ Fleck era, Harrison? And what is the answer to that question?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. I actually think that the COVID year, that one, just
No,
because.
I asked them what's PJ
Oh.
Fleck's favorite, what's their favorite one of PJ Fleck over Iowa? And
Oh, how did
yeah.
they respond? Just like stunned silence.
Yes.
Like you're gonna really talk smack while you're living under our roof.
Also, it's like we ran for 300 yards and scored 10 points. Like, unbelievable. Unbelievable stuff. Both coach, I think we said it last year too. Both coaches tried everything they could to lose this game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what. So I was thinking very specifically about this because it was so weird when it happened at the time. One, when Ibrahim, they had to call the timeout because of his face mask. And I had the horrible tweet with the horrible picture of Nathan Fielder where it's like, Iowa is just, they're letting Ibrahim wear himself out. And he fumbled two or three plays later. And then the next drive, he takes himself out on a second down play. And I'm like, that's weird. They run it again, put themselves in like third and six, third and seven, and have they don't have to throw it, but they choose to throw it. They put it in. You've made this joke in your power rankings, I think, multiple times. A kid named Athens hands, and it was a fine throw, but Riley Moss, incredible coverage, Jack Campbell with the non-pick six heard around the world, and like I think it worked, like to just let my, like Iowa was just able to take so many body blows that he just spun PJ Fleck up once again into, a twisted brain.
Rope-a-doping Minnesota into Kirk Ferentz's mind palace is truly like the funniest way to put into this. Like, yeah, I'm gonna call Ethan Mr. Alphabet for the next 4 years because you know he's gonna be Minnesota's quarterback for as long as you can imagine, just like Tanner. And it's like you think about all the crazy. I mean, we'll talk about the pick six that wasn't later, I guess, but. It's so easy to like nitpick all these coaching decisions. Like, first quarter, Minnesota kicked a field goal instead of going for it on fourth and one. When you have Muhammad Ibrahim, Kirk not taking any timeouts with just under a minute left to close of the second half when it looked like they could have at least gotten a field goal on that drive. Running out of shotgun in the third and fourth quarter with Petras, like, risking a bad snap when that looked like it was going to happen all day long. Like, scary, weird, scary coaching stuff, not even, like, accounting. You know, I watched that game outside in Arizona. So, like, thinking, even, like, considering the 15-degree and 25-mile-per-hour wind conditions wasn't even an option at times, like, totally discounting that. But it's so tough for me because obviously I feel like I should be eating a little bit of crow.
Yeah.
As down as I was on Iowa, just not even, you know, just last week, the week before that, the week before that, the week before that. But yes, now it's like, I mean, you put it in our Slack, we're going to win the Big Ten West 2 years in a row.
Yeah. And that's why you play.
That's the goal. I mean, sure. Did it only take 8 wins from the Big Ten West? Should Illinois have won today? Should Iowa have beaten Illinois? It's like, I mean, that's college football. It's all what ifs. I kept on saying if ifs and buts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. And right now, for better or for worse, it looks like Iowa football could have a very Merry Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of want to kind of tie this back to the Ohio State game because I think what was funniest in the moment about Ohio State versus, like, you kind of take that, maybe not the similar mindset, but, like, the inverse of the mindset. Everyone came away just so impressed with Iowa's defense against a team that put up 50-some points. I can't even remember the number. And granted, and they ended up tallying less yards than this Minnesota team, and everyone's just going haywire on Twitter. The defense is not – they did its job because you're not supposed to have them score points, but they gave up 399 yards. This is the most yards Iowa has ever given up. I think part of it was – and Rob had it on Twitter. He's like, this, so many people avoid what special teams means. And special teams means – that Iowa pinned Minnesota twice at inside the 5 yard line, one on a return because of the previous one. So they forced them to go 95 yards and they couldn't. And they racked up all the yards that, you know, look great in a box score, but ultimately did not put points on the board. And it's just, I do wonder if this was maybe just the most absurd way that Kirk Ferentz brought PJ Fleck into his mind palace. Because Ibrahim, I've got this stat up. The only person other than Ibrahim to score or rush for 250 yards or more against Iowa is Jonathan Taylor in 2019. 31 attempts. 8.1 yards per attempt. Ibrahim wasn't there. He's at 6.7. But, man, just a totally wild game. Totally wild.
I mean, that was a blueprint to beat Iowa. And they just, what? They ran out of building material, supply chain issues, right? Like, truly, yeah, I think it's been beaten to death. But it's like you look at a blind box score, and how do you not think – that has points omitted from it. How do you not think Iowa beat, or how do you not think Minnesota didn't beat Iowa by 3 scores? Truly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think anytime you rush for 200 or more yards, you expect to come away with the win like that.
I mean, at least in the Big 10. Yeah. At least in the big, I want to talk about that. What do we have at half? Iowa had 4 rushing yards.
Okay. Question. At half.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was 4 total when accounting for sacks, well, those included. And it's like, and also too, it felt like, I can't remember which, I think it was the second or third quarter where it's Caleb Johnson had an 18 yard run. And then another, I think Gavin Williams had another 18 or 19 yard run. And then they start passing. And it's like, Kirk was trying, they're both coaches are playing into each other's hands there. It feels like Caleb Johnson moved so far ahead of the other two guys. Like they were give. I know they gave the ball to Gavin Williams on like a 3rd and 20, and it was like, yes, let's hand the ball off to our slowest running back on 3rd and 20. It's like, also let's run out of shotgun on 3rd and 22. It's just weird, like weird game. But again, you know, like the sum, I guess, was greater than its parts, and that's just sort of how Iowa football is, right?
It is. And like, I thought the offense was like, it was really kind of good in the first, I don't know, quarter and a half. And that's what really blew my mind. And I don't, this is another
we had
point
10
that...
Right. It was 10 points in the first quarter and then didn't score again until the final 90 seconds, not final 30 seconds.
Yeah. And it was like the, I think it was just because as Rob had said, Iowa just didn't, or excuse me, Minnesota just didn't have a way to stop Laporta. Like, how do you not have a way to stop the one guy that Petrus locks most onto? Now, I do think Iowa was doing some of the things I like to see them do in terms of the slant routes. Laporta, Brecht had one. And they got more vertical at times. And I think that, because the one to Brecht inside the, you know, the shadow of Iowa's own goalposts, that was one instance. And then obviously the more or less ball don't lie play to Luke Lachey right down the middle. It's like,
yep.
What I don't understand is Brian Ferentz, every single time he moves inside of opponent territory, you see a shot play. And somehow Minnesota wasn't quite ready for it. The first time it happened, they were ready for it. The second time it happened, the one you described after two big runs, and then, you know, they get the sack. And then they weren't ready for it on the biggest play of the game, where Iowa's got the ball in Minnesota territory, and they're just not ready for it. I think I wonder if Petrus took a deeper drop back than normal. Like, it almost was like he sprinted to a spot and launched from even further down the field. But man, it's just a totally wild game. Totally wild.
How many times, the only thing I wrote down in my notes app following that game is how many times we run a tight end screen over the middle. Cause I think my head count is 7 times.
Seven. Oh no. I mean, they ran it the first time to great effect.
Yes.
They ran the tunnel screen on the second, I think it was that same drive to kind of get Iowa into a little better field goal range. And then they ran it a third time to Lachey on that, what I thought could have been the last drive of the game. And it's like, why are you doing this now? It worked earlier. It's just like the classic, we're mashing buttons in NCAA football, the video game. It's like, okay, that worked at the very beginning of the game. Let's see if they forgot about the one play that gashed them. And they did not.
And also, like, thank God, too, like, Luke Lachey is really, really good. And I think he's going to be great next year after Laporta leaves and goes to the NFL. It's like, what happens this game, too, if Iowa isn't tight end university and we don't have anybody, and Petrus doesn't have another 6'6", 6'7", 230-pound guy to throw to? And again, the what-if game is stupid, but it's just so – that's just – I mean, Iowa football, and it also makes you think, too. I feel like that's, like, the easiest thing to defend against. I feel like P.J. Fleck doesn't watch past Iowa games. Because we've beaten Minnesota the exact same way every single time.
Yes. Yes. Well, I'm trying to think, did they have any turnovers last year? Because, like, I don't think they did in the course of the game. But then they didn't in the course of the game either. So, like, they're just playing right into the way Kirk wants to play. And, yeah, maybe he just watches old Iowa-Minnesota games. Maybe that's how he scouts. Iowa, because it's just it's baffling.
Scout,
it's so yeah. baffling.
It is pretty bitty. It is pretty baffling. Like, wouldn't you? I don't even know how to explain it. Really, I guess like. I'm not going to say PJ's coaching for his job because I don't think he is, but it feels like he doesn't. And maybe I think we complain about this about Kirk Ferentz, where he doesn't place any more importance on a game or a team.
Oh yeah.
And it feels like PJ doesn't do this for Iowa, where it's like, how do you not make this? I was reading an article, I think, where it's now for starting last year, every Michigan practice, they have like a 2-minute Ohio State drill where they scream, like they start blasting the music, and it's all, I think they might play Ohio State's fight song, and it's just all full pads, full 100% tackling. And they said it helped them beat Ohio State last year. And I feel like it's 8 years in a row. Like, I feel like his next contract, his next extension has to include, you got to beat Iowa. Otherwise, we're changing the locks, because how many times has PJ Fleck needed to beat Iowa to win the Big Ten West, or have an opportunity to keep the door open to win the Big Ten West? It just hasn't happened. We're talking about PJ Fleck too much, I think, too, right now, and maybe should probably be talking about, as much as I shouldn't say, I hate to say it, but like talk about the full trophy cabinet. Not full, I guess, but right now 50% full trophy cabinet Iowa has right now, with a chance of making it 75% full next week.
Yeah, I think it's super important. You obviously love to see it, and as just the nature of the season goes on, when you play a rival, it really doesn't matter how you beat them. It's just come out with the trophy, and Iowa did. And I think to your point, like the fact that, you know, beating Wisconsin even in a down year, that's important, and it built kind of this, or continued to build on the foundation of, okay, Iowa's hit rock bottom, the West still has a path, and they've gotten the help that they need to be there. And to me, I think there's maybe even more to take from this season than last season in terms of like Iowa's resilience, because I think last season they lost to two teams who had constantly been Iowa foils, right, in Purdue and Wisconsin, and that was the nadir. So you had kind of all of that animosity built up that was like multi-year. And then to lose to two teams that are better than you, obviously losing to Iowa State stinks. How they lost stunk. Losing to Illinois stinks. But here they are, right, 5-3. And you can stomach two of the three losses. The third one, in some ways, it's like the Iowa State game in terms of how it flipped, right? Because what was it, 2008 was the last time that Illinois had beat Iowa. But by having trophies, in some ways, I think for a fan base, it's even more important than going to Indianapolis, because those are things where you can send them to the state fair for a day and fans can take their picture with Floyd. And whether that unfairly puts emphasis on these games, Kirk has identified them as more important. And, you know, I don't know how different this felt, though. Like, I just think that Petras played really pretty well, and the defense came through when they had to. And ultimately, you know, that's why you play. Like, it is weird, though, like the defensive line, like, I said, we said, oh, we're not going to nitpick, and then let's go ahead and nitpick. The defensive line, after having like two or three games where they were living in an opponent's backfield, only two tackles for loss, zero sacks. I thought there was a stretch where Shannon played really well on that drive where Ibrahim fumbled, but really not Iowa's best game. Just if it is there stuff to take from that, or is it just okay? Michigan beat Iowa this way. Illinois beat Iowa this way. Minnesota has that strength. They're going to try and beat Iowa this way. And they arguably played better than both Illinois and Michigan in some respects, but they couldn't do it. And as we've said multiple times, the points are ultimately what matters. Cue the tweet of Kirk Ferentz saying yards are the most overrated stat, because once again, the man is correct.
As much as I hate PFF numbers, I think they'll back me up on this. I can't remember a time where Iowa has missed more tackles in a game than today. And a lot of it, too, might have been like Riley Moss trying to tackle Muhammad Ibrahim. But I think part of it, too, is I remember reading on Twitter on Thursday night is, I can't think of things that are less fun than trying to tackle Derrick Henry
in
15-degree weather, you know, vis-a-vis the Packers-Titans game on Thursday night. And exact same thing applies, I think, today, even though, I mean, not to can say Derrick Henry has 30 pounds and 4 inches on Muhammad Ibrahim, but same type of deal. It's not to cut him some slack, but obviously there were it looked like there were a few missed tackles, even more missed assignments, a lot of opposite of discipline on the edge, it seemed like, for Iowa's defensive ends today. But I mean, thankfully both the quarterbacks aren't going to win a lot of games. I mean, they're both sort of, you know, game managers for both these teams, right? Like, what did Petras, did he start 7 of 8, or is that incorrect? Like, he looked elite in the first quarter, and Ethan, I look back in the third or fourth quarter, and I see he has, I think at the start of the fourth quarter, he had 8 completed passes.
Yeah.
And they were still, it was tied, still 10-10. I mean, what else is, what, again, how many times have I said that's Big Ten football? It's Big Ten West football, but I'm watching USC, UCLA right now, and it's two different sports, really.
It is. And yeah, to your point, let's do some fact checking. Like, Petras was 8 of 9 to start. So you're, I think,
even better.
Spot on.
No, yeah.
And then, yeah, to your point, like, Kaliant, Kalaik,
what did I say? I'm going to call Mr. Alphabet from now on.
Mr. Alphabet, yeah. If you're like Gary Dolphin. Kalaik Manis, he started 7 of 8, but the difference between his 7 and 8 and Petras' 7 and 8 is that he threw, 1, 2, 3 passes in the third quarter, despite Minnesota having the ball so much of the time in the third quarter. And I mean, that was just, were you getting flashbacks a little bit to the Iowa State game this year, where they just had the one drive where they go down, they score a touchdown. It's like Iowa holds them to not the exact yardage that they need to gain, but they get that exact yardage to continue moving the chains on third downs. And it's just crazy. Just absolutely crazy. Cause yeah, we look at the third downs where's that one? 7 of 16, 3 of 11 for Iowa. And man, just absolutely bonkers.
I can assure you I was getting no flashbacks.
Okay.
To Iowa State. I don't think, because the Iowa offense was moribund the entire time. Like,
yeah.
And it was, I guess it did start dumping rain later in the Iowa State game, but Minnesota looked infinitely more competent than Iowa State, even, I guess,
yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, so that's without maybe question. That's partially why it was Iowa, you know, Minnesota was defending Iowa, whereas Iowa was just tripping over its own shoelaces against Iowa State. It's, you know, you don't want to play the game. If Iowa played Iowa State today, it'd be a totally different outcome, especially because I think Iowa State is losing right now or just lost. Fact check me on that, I guess. But I mean, yeah, it's a bad season for the Cyclones, which I guess that's the only time they ever do beat Iowa too, right? Is whenever they're pretty shitty. So I guess that's another microcosm of classic Kirk Ferentz football.
Yeah, I think the way I've always framed it is like Iowa State, whether Iowa State beats Iowa has no bearing on the type of team they'll be. But if Iowa loses to Iowa State, it is potentially a predictor of – more often a predictor because those have been like 7 wins has been the ceiling, more or less, outside of – oh, what year was that? 2002, of course. 7-3, 1:15 left in the third quarter. Iowa State appears to be driving. So good for them. Any final thoughts, Ben, before maybe we open this up a little bit?
No, I would like to open it up.
Alrighty.
But, no, I mean, final thoughts is, I guess, we have to come to terms with the fact, like, Iowa going to the Big Ten championship 2 years in a row on paper, wouldn't that call for an extension for any other head coach in the country?
If he didn't already get extended until 2029.
He's been extended. Yes. He's been extended back-to-back seasons before, hasn't he? Though,
I think there was a point where it was like just the rolling deal. Okay. Like before this
must
extension.
Be nice. Yeah,
it must be nice. I know. As college football coaches everywhere have 8-figure buyouts. The best job in the world is to be a fired college football coach. All right, if anyone wants to share their takes, let us know. You can request speaking capabilities.
Yeah, if anybody was at the game, they want to talk about what they saw, what they ate, what they smelled.
Oh, there we go. We got our friend, heavy metal lawyer.
I can't see requests. I'm just a listener, not a host.
Okay. Oh, I see what you did then.
So
right,
I didn't do anything. You did it.
I did it. You requested being a speaker, I thought.
I was just so eager to get on.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, HML, how's it going?
How you doing, boys?
Hi.
Could not be better.
Good to hear your voice after a win. My God, it was tough to watch at times, I'll say that. What I wanted to say is I thought Ibrahim was extremely impressive. I mean, we've known for a couple of years he's been a good back, but man, he gashed us today. I mean, it almost reminded me, obviously, different style of runner, but when Saquon Barkley just took us to town that 1 year, where we lost them at the last second there. But I mean, their strategy to just run him all this year has been bad, I think, because he's tired. But in this game, it actually worked out really well. I mean, I think without him, they're not competitive. And I was shocked that PJ Fleck decided to pass it there toward the end, that the play that ended up in a pick. I mean, you got to believe if they just do not pass the ball again for the rest of the game, they win, right?
Yeah. I don't know why they passed in the third or fourth quarter.
Makes no sense.
I mean,
it makes no goddamn sense.
Yeah. Their game plan up until then was really good. You know, they're kind of out-ferencing Ferentz a little bit there. But man, like, I just had the feeling, even when Ibrahim fumbled there, first I thought that was kind of a fatigue fumble, but then I was like, well, three and out, we'll give them the ball back, they'll drive, kick a field goal or score a touchdown, doesn't matter, they're going to win. So I just, that play to pass the ball, it's almost like, I mean, in hindsight, it's 20/20, but it was almost like a snake bitten coach move. But yeah, glad to get the win. If I could really quick make a point about Brain, because I know that's on everybody's mind. You know, I was talking to my brother and some other people, and they're worried about accountability at the end of the season, which I get. But I mean, we've got a chance to win the Big Ten West. We can't worry too much about that. I think it is what it is. Either the people who can make him accountable are going to be pissed enough or they aren't. But my thoughts on him at this point is, do you guys think he's just overthinking? Because he had some good play calls today, I will say. But it's almost like every fourth or fifth one is really good and smart. But everything else is like set up to that instead of just like looking at the bigger picture and like thinking about what circumstance you're in and play calling to that, and just like trying to get a few yards when you need them, or trying to like set up, you know, second and third and short. It's almost like he just thinks he's the smartest guy and he just will not learn. Yes. It's just the hubris. And it just, what are we 5 or 6 years with him now? And he's just not getting better. So that was the other point I wanted to make, but I appreciate you guys.
Absolutely. So I'll start with your second point first. And I think the thing about Brian/Brain is I just think he has, to your point, one or two play calls every so often where it's, hey, let's see how smart I am. Like, I have to show you how smart I am by calling this play. And I think he fell victim to that on that 3-and-out, which was only Iowa's 2nd 3-and-out of the game. Like, I think Iowa, you know, deserves a lot of credit for going, you know, 2/3 of the game without having a 3-and-out. Now, of course, they had 3-and-out on back-to-back possessions at the worst time, but it just feels like 2 steps forward, 3 back often. And then I think the point on the snake-bitten coach with the pass on 3rd down, the play I was afraid of was Fleck pulling out the fake run, QB run. And that was one that they had kind of set up all game, and they had that huge play, 19 yards, that was like, oh my God, everyone just fell for Ibrahim diving, and Mr. Alphabet was able to gash Iowa. So I think it was just, man, it was just, they did the exact thing that I would have wanted them to do in that situation.
I struggle saying what I'm about to say, but you set the table doing the exact thing. What was it? Scratch where they itched, right?
Like, yep.
And again, to bring up like the Brain part, I mean, again, I'm just scared of the vindication that the greater Iowa football industrial complex is going to serve on a platter. I didn't listen to the post game press conference. Did you? I haven't seen any quotes come out. All I saw was a picture of Kirk hugging Jack Campbell. And if that doesn't light your fire, then your wood is wet, right? Like, you just have to, yeah, you have to feel something.
He absolutely beasted this game, and I feel like, oh my this God. Year, every game that we've won, we've had one defensive player has just put their mark on it in an incredible way. I mean, last game it was DeJean.
Yep.
I think like Merriweather had a game, maybe it was the Rutgers game, where he was just damn good. I mean, we've got at least half this defense is gonna go pro, and it's just so sad that the offense, if it was average, we'd be thumping the West and we'd be talking about, okay, we've got a puncher's chance against Michigan or OSU, you know? So, I mean, I definitely get the disappointment, but what are you going to do? I mean, if you got a shot to win the West, you kind of got to, like, it's out of our control anyway. We might as well just root for our team. And I mean, if the right people get pissed, they get pissed. I mean, if the money doesn't get pissed, then we're going to have another year of this shit. So, you know,
yeah,
I mean,
6 years, Spencer Petras coming right up.
Yeah, oh my God. But I, you know, my point about Ibrahim too, it's like, are you guys impressed with how many good backs there are in the Big Ten right now? I mean, we've got Caleb Johnson, who I think is going to be, I mean, he's already real damn good, but then top 4 in the conference right now with Corum and Ibrahim. And then, what's his name? Brown.
Chase Brown.
He's so good.
Ohio State,
I watched
guys.
That game,
yeah.
Obviously, and earlier
Clavin
today.
Allen, yeah.
It was tough because I like that Illinois team a lot. I think they're fun to watch. They play really tough, and he's a damn good back. And I kind of like Brett Bielema too. So it's almost like, no matter what happens in this game, I'm happy, because if Michigan's sad, that makes me happy. But obviously, them losing opens up the path for Iowa, so that's good for me too. But yeah, that was the other point I wanted to make. Just a lot of good running back talent in the Big Ten right now.
It really is incredible, and it's like it does suit the conference well, especially the Big Ten West.
And I'm pretty sure isn't Minnesota's their number one running back last draft, or Ibrahim got hurt. His last name's Irving. I think, isn't he the starting running back for Oregon?
He is, right now
too. Yeah. So could have been even stronger.
All righty. We'll keep it open.
Yeah. Anybody else want to chime in?
Got anything else? Ooh. Chris H. Chris Holterhouse. Let's go.
Good, strong Iowa name.
Tis indeed. Hello, Chris. How are you? Oh, whoops.
Oh, sorry. First time doing it. So.
No, that was me.
Okay, I got the mic.
First time, long time, yeah.
Yep. So, I mean, games like that are just why you become a fan. I mean, I know this year has been pretty much down the shitter, but a game like that, I mean, it was very enjoyable. And one thing that I wanted to call out on that is kind of ironic, the Jack Campbell interception, who made it happen? Riley Moss. So he fucked over Minneapolis one last time. So I found that pretty ironic.
He did.
So, yep. But yep. With this kind of win, you know, with the type of week that we've been having, and it's been so much with Brian and all his faults. I mean, we're just putting up with it at this point. But with the news with, you know, what's going on with Proctor and what's going on with him and the anxiety that's been building on for a win like this, it's pretty awesome. So.
Yeah, definitely a salve. Like, I mean, I think I don't know if it would have, how much it would have hurt if they lost, because it would have felt like, oh, the better team won. But I think when, or that would have been the logic I used. But the fact that, to your point, there's a lot of weirdness going on, it's always nice to hang your hat on something at the end of the week.
Now there's three teams that got to depend on Nebraska, of all teams, to salvage whatever seasons that they have left. They have to depend on Nebraska, which really every other year you can't really go over them because they seem to play us as their best. But this year, I don't know. I don't know about them.
We'll see. I mean, they're doing what they do. That Wisconsin score was wild.
Depending on Nebraska, is not. I mean, why do you want to even do that? You bring up a good point. Like recruiting implications, I guess, of this game is. For all the, you know, the Midwest, I'm not even going to try and think about what, how many Minnesota recruits I was in the hunt for, but I guess, yeah, with the Caden Proctor situation, I don't want to postulate anything, but if Iowa keeps on winning, you know, that certainly makes you feel a little bit better about that circumstance. Not that I feel great about it, but I guess the counter to my pessimism this whole time is like, I mean, don't you want Iowa to win? Don't you want them to be good? Don't you want them to set the table for future success? And there's no better way than to arrange those placemats than by racking up W's.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Like I said, it gets to a point where we stop worrying about how Iowa wins and start caring only about the win. And it's nice to have the wins. I'm going to add Grant Baker. Here we go. Hello, Grant. I think I might have muted you.
Can you get me now?
You are on.
It feels like it's been a long time, like not at all this season, where there's been like real juice inside Kinnick because everyone's just been so pissed off at the offense. I don't know. I feel like the vibe's different now in the fan base. Like you mentioned it, like we've just accepted that the offense sucks and now we only care about winning. I feel like we're all in a good spot right now as fans, and there's going to be like real juice inside Kinnick for maybe only the first or second time this season. And I think the way that the players have finished this season, like they deserve that. So I'm really excited for the players that they get to finish their senior year with some real enthusiasm inside the stadium.
That's a fantastic point. Like, I think you hit the nail on the head that the only juice that's been on this team for a while has been the Boo Birds, and that's never fun. Whatever you think of booing college kids, but to have a real chance to celebrate at home and to celebrate with, you know, maybe they're able to take the trophy and do it on the field, but that's a hypothetical, and I think Nebraska will be doing their best to make sure that doesn't happen, but to have that as a possibility is definitely super exciting for everyone involved, because it's sold out, and that's exciting for everyone.
That was my biggest takeaway from the Northwestern game, was after three straight losses where they were getting shit on rightfully so, by national pundits on national television. You just have to, all jokes aside, you have to be so happy for these kids. Because, I mean, sure, you can make the argument, yeah, they deserve whatever is coming at them, but also, more than anything, they deserve better. And, you know, what is, again, keep on saying it over and over again, but winning solves a lot of problems. And the biggest problem, I think, was just negativity and maybe facts for this Iowa team. But a W is a fact, too. And now another winning season secured in the books, another bowl eligibility, another bowl game, and now more than anything, championship implications are still on the table going into the last game of the season. And what do you say? That's what you play for, Harrison, and that's what we blog for.
The defense kind of taken on its own, like, just against the world. They just kept saying,
that's because that's the
they just say, you didn't believe in us. You gave us shit. You know, Black Heart Gold Pants kept shitting on us, so we're going to try to prove them wrong. You know, and I think Seth Benson made a comment about it here this evening. So, but I'll say this. I mean, and Lystico tweeted this. He basically said that Jack Campbell is the best Iowa linebacker ever. Do you think he's true on that statement?
I always thought it was Anger. And then Anger said, no, it's Josie Jewell. But I think I have to go with Campbell. Like, he's so big, and he does all the things that Jewell did.
I think all the great linebackers kind of precede me. As a Minnesota Vikings fan, I don't know, you know, I'm probably feeling Greenway. God, even, like, you think about it, like, Kirksey, still, like, he had an incredible career, but he just was on bad teams. But Campbell, I think, Campbell's going to be a first-round draft pick, right? And that just doesn't happen. And that, I think I think so. What? He's 6'3", the middle linebacker. Who doesn't need one of those? It just, yeah. I mean, I don't know if he's the best, but I think he could certainly be settled to have the best, maybe NFL career. And that speaks a lot to what he's been doing. And I just wish, you know, things would have worked out better for this entire defense.
Yeah, each of the linebackers had stellar performances, but I think with Jack, it seems that he basically has the whole team on his back on each of these games. Like, you look at his stat line, specifically this one, an interception, should have been a touchdown, forced fumble. Like, he's willing this team into win. Like, I'm not for sure if there's an MVP of the last few games, obviously the defense as a whole, but to me, primarily, he's the MVP. Now, for how great, you know, Campbell and Greenway, Kirksey, Morris, Hitchens, all those guys, you know, I just can't recall an impact that a linebacker had except Jack. So, I'm sure it'll be a debate moving forward here for years to come, but I agree with you there. I definitely believe that he should be a first-round draft pick. I thought he was probably at best a second, maybe a third, but the way he's playing, and I'm sure he'll continue to play, I think he's a first-rounder.
I'd echo that he's the greatest. I mean, I was an undergrad at the same time as Chad Greenway, so I saw him play a lot. He was a tackle machine, but I'll just echo that. I think Jack is the best, and I thought Josie was the best. And he's going to be a great pro.
No question.
Yeah, I think what maybe Campbell was missing was like that signature moment like tonight. I don't know if that's a super hot take, but I think that
that's a great point. It's, yeah, I don't want to nitpick it, but like Jewel, maybe some of his worst games are on the biggest stages too, which might hurt. It's just, that's the way it works.
All right. I think we'll close out with Teresa and then we'll go ahead and call it a night. Hi, Teresa. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me. I was just kind of following up on your offensive thoughts. So I've seen quite a bit that people are saying, you know, if anybody boos Spencer on Friday, they'll come over and punch them personally in the face, which I think is warranted after all the shit that he's taken this season. But I do think it's interesting that he's never been voted a team captain. So I don't know if that's any thought on that. And then the other thing is, I don't know if you've checked out goverhole.com today, but it's like a circular firing ring. And I'm wondering if PJ Fleck isn't on the hot seat versus Iowa and Wisconsin, which is, you know, not,
I can,
not what
I can assure
for.
You, I have not checked out goverhole.com. I mean, if they're going to fire PJ Fleck, who are they going to, like, who wants to come and coach the Gophers, right? Come, it's just, I think it's kind of foolish.
Those are big facts.
But
those are big facts.
I love the Schadenfreude, you know, again, Minnesota family, Gopher family. And they thought PJ was, what, the second coming of, God, who was their last good coach? Lou Holtz. Like, come on, give me a break.
No, I think point about Spencer, if anyone tries to boo him when he's walking out on the field to give his mom a flower, that would be just the absolute coldest, most unwarranted thing of all time. So, like, I'm with you there. Like, there's – people should not do that. And he's shown a lot of resilience because he's played well the last 4 or 5 weeks. Wisconsin accepted. Everyone plays poorly against Wisconsin. Shall we, I guess, wrap this up, Ben?
Yeah, I was talking for a second there, but I was on mute. Everybody plays poorly against Wisconsin, I guess, lately. We'll see. But I'm ready to call us tonight. There's coyotes howling in the background. If you can hear, I got a close up the ranch here.
Alrighty. Well, thanks everyone for joining. Thanks to all the speakers for popping on. Appreciated the commentary. This will actually go up on our podcast feed. So I've not been doing that lately because they've been the mini ones. But thanks everyone for joining. Go Hawks.
Fuck State.
Go Hawks.